It's a Walnut Wednesday episode today on the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're glad to have you along. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to our special Walnut Wednesday segment here today with Taylor Charlstrom, we'll bring you additional feature reports, and I'll have a check-in of national and regional agricultural news headlines, and we'll start with regional ag news right after this word from our sponsor.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing. Learn more at walnuts.org.
In regional agricultural news, the 2022 vintage in some of California's wine grape growing regions took a massive hit from a mid-April frost that will leave some farmers with nothing to harvest. Bruce Fry, who grows wine grapes near Lodi, said some of his vines lost their grape clusters still in early stages of development to the freeze. Overnight temperatures the night of April 11th and 12th reached 27.7 to 30 degrees around Lodi, with some lows lasting 3 to 4 hours. While he's more fortunate than others, he still has damage. Near Thornton in northern San Joaquin Valley, producer Frank Ulgeri said losses to his grapevines run well north of 90%. Wine grape growers on the valley floor and in the foothills east and southeast of Sacramento are reporting significant losses of their 2022 crops. Jim Spinetta, a Plymouth wine grape grower and president of the Amador County Farm Bureau, said the frost was the worst he has seen since the 1980s. It wasn't necessarily the temperature, it was time. He said his crops endured 4 hours at 26 to 27 degrees. In Calaveras County, Agricultural Commissioner Jesse Fowler reported an average of 60% damage to wine grapes. Tim Pelican, San Joaquin County's agricultural commissioner, said damage levels in his county likely won't meet the 30% threshold for a disaster request, but because his county borders others that have declared disasters, San Joaquin farmers can take advantage of U.S. Department of Agriculture programs for farmers who lose crops to adverse weather. Pelican has already filed a disaster declaration request for the county's cherry crop after the late February frost caused about a 50% crop loss. Rain and hail just after Easter may have been a backbreaker. Producers will now be on the watch for mildew and mealybug issues. And as for irrigation, they're going to have to water a little bit less in the beginning because there isn't any canopy growth. But as the leaves and shoots start growing, they'll bump up the water, according to Ulgeri. The California Department of Food and Agriculture Office of Farm to Fork is accepting applications for the 2022 California Farm to School Incubator Grant Program until 5 p.m. on July 6th. The program will award competitive grants to support projects that cultivate equity, nurture students, build climate resilience, and create scalable and sustainable change. Applicants may apply to multiple tracks based on eligibility and project type. To support a systems approach to advancing farm-to-school throughout the state, the program offers 4 funding tracks. They are the California Farm-to-School K-12 Procurement and Education Grant, the California Farm-to-Early Care and Education Grant, and the California Farm-to-School Producer Grant. For more information, visit the California Farm-to-School Incubator Grant Program webpage. There you will see the formal request for applications, access to the online portal track through which applications must be submitted, and you can register for informational webinars about each funding track. The California Budget Act of 2021 included a $60 million one-time general fund allocation for CDFA F2F to sustain and expand the California Farm to School Incubator Grant Program, with $30 million allocated for fiscal year 2021 to 2022 and $30 million allocated for fiscal year 2022 to 2023. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture National Agricultural Statistics Service California Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending on May 8th, average low temperatures for California range from 21 to 49 degrees in the mountains, 32 to 71 in a desert, 37 to 64 in a central valley, and 38 to 61 along the coast. Average highs for the state range from 38 to 81 in the mountains, 50 to 89 along the coast, 61 to 93 in a central valley, and 69 to 102 in a desert. California DWR CIMIS stations recorded 1,369 chill hours at Gerber, 1,269 chill hours in Williams, 1,343 chill hours at Hoyt, 1,614 chill hours at Merced, 1,337 chill hours at Fresno, and 1,124 chill hours at Arvin. Hand thinning and irrigation of stone fruit orchards continued. Early stone fruit varieties were harvested. Cherry harvest began. Apples, pears, peaches, plums, and nectarines continued to develop. A few early peach varieties were harvested. Grape vineyards were developing fruit, tied, and drip irrigation in Tulare County. Kiwi fruit vineyards were being tied and irrigated. Persimmon and pomegranate trees were steadily developing. Citrus groves were cleared of beehives. Valencia and navel oranges, tangelo, grapefruit, and lemon harvests were consistent. Some harvests continued to slow down due to high temperatures. Seedless tangerine and mandarin groves remained netted to prevent cross-pollination. Olive groves were cleaned of debris and pruned. Strawberry and blueberry harvests were ongoing. In nut crops, some orchard floors were cleaned up and weed control continued where necessary. Almond, walnut, and pistachio nut development was progressing nicely. In Colusa, Sacramento, Solano, and Yolo counties, processing tomato fields transplanting continued and organic asparagus harvest continued. In Riverside County, green beans flowered early, causing poor production. Weather caused uneven growth for sweet corn. In San Mateo County, lettuce and peas were harvested. Plantings of peppers and Brussels sprouts were underway. And in Tulare County, leaf lettuce was picked and sold at local stands. Onions were available for harvest. Development in Napa County's world-famous wine country is shaped by the county's general plan, and that crucial vision will be getting refreshed. The County Board of Supervisors have endorsed updating a general plan that governs growth in the unincorporated county outside of the cities. It wants to launch a multi-year effort that includes community outreach. The 2008 general plan calls itself the county's official policy statement to guide growth and development in rural areas. Now, state law requires the county to update its entire general plan. But the 2008 plan's environmental impact report is through 2030. County officials said development beyond that, absent a new impact report, could require additional environmental analysis. Sections in a county general plan include land use, circulation, housing, conservation, open space, and noise. An initial discussion was held recently. It serves as a baby step, as county officials will return to supervisors on August 23rd with a proposed schedule and budget and recommendations for creating an advisory committee. County officials said a multi-year general plan update could cost $7.3 million, with the environmental impact report in the $500,000 to $1 million range, but this is a rough estimate, and they will see if costs could be less. There are several steps that county staff recommend taking in preparation for the larger general plan update. One is to complete the county's climate action plan. The county released a draft in 2019, but then put the matter on hold as the county and cities discussed regional strategies. Another is to update the baseline data that shows environmental conditions in the county. Examples are earthquake faults, flooding and sea level rise areas, wildfire hazardous areas, and groundwater conditions. Another is to update the airport land use compatibility plan, which dates back to 1991 and was last amended in 1999. The plan shows what types of development, be it housing, recreational, or industrial, is compatible in various areas near airports. The county has recently disagreed with American Canyon over whether proposed apartments on Oat Hill in the city could hamper Napa County Airport. American Canyon said the compatibility plan is outdated. Napa County is not the only jurisdiction that wants to update its general plan. The city's Napa and American Canyon already have general plan updates underway.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Whole orchard recycling has been proven successful in almond orchards, but the same can't necessarily be said for walnut orchards. While current research shows that there is no detriment to walnut growth so far in two UCCE research orchards, the benefits also aren't the same in almond, at least not for what has been found so far. UCCE Orchard Systems Advisor Luke Milliron is part of a research group that is looking at the efficacy of whole orchard recycling in walnut at two sites in the Sacramento Valley.
The first site is what I'll call War One. It's also called infamously Chipocalypse because we were unable to accurately track the the chips deposited per acre. And then some of the chips went into the no chip area. So it really became a demonstration, a pilot study. And currently, Clarissa and I are only tracking growth and monitoring tree health. Are there any increased disease issues? What are the trees looking like? Are they growing at the same rate as the control trees? So incorporated in 2018, the fresh orchard planted in 2019, and then you have really no significant differences in nematodes or growth across the treatments. Here are the root lesion nematode showing some slightly elevated counts in 2017, but then there was fumigation and it did not appear that the chips at all interfered with fumigation. And those levels in the 3 years I subsequently monitored were low and they were the same. And then growth, so far, the chip trees, the control trees are all the same size. So that has been good. And then I did take in 2020 some leaf analyses, and those actually showed higher levels of potassium and boron. And unlike the work in almonds, there was really no tailored nitrogen fertilization changes. This is great cooperator, Deseret Farms of California, and they farmed this first leaf walnut planting just like they would any other field.
Mill Iron presented the information on walnut whole orchard recycling at UCCE's virtual statewide walnut series back in February. He noted that the inability to accurately track chips and acre deposition in the first site posed a problem for quantifying the benefits of whole orchard recycling in walnut, and was approached by Cliff Boumel of AgriMiora to start a second trial that could quantify the chips and acre deposition.
We've found that the chips per acre is potentially much greater than what has been documented for almonds. And it's a properly replicated, beautiful plot, thanks to some incredible diligence and careful work from Cliff. And so removed the previous really old trees in 2020, planted March of this past year, no fumigation at this small site. It's just a 4 acre site, so they didn't weren't able to bring in fumigation or anything like that. But this is a site with lesion nematode, crown gall, oak root fungus, you know, the whole nine yards of what we see in so many old walnut orchards. It has a history of it. So it'll be interesting to document whether there's any increased disease or issues. So here you can see I laid out these tins like baking sheets ahead of the chips being spread, and just literally a ton of chips here. And then that calculated out to 136 tons per acre wet. And then the number we typically talk about is the dry number. So 91 tons per acre dry. And that's well above the 60 to 70 tons per acre that has been documented in almonds so far. And needed some big, rice discs to incorporate this, with those big discs, it incorporated beautifully. And here we are this past summer, nematodes, nutrients, soil, growth, tissues, and then yield and other measures will be measured down the road here.
Just like the first whole orchard recycling trial in walnut, the second trial compared whole orchard recycling rows to control. Big differences noted were leaf analysis in first leaf and nematode control, as well as weed control.
Not only were the trees growing well, Cliff really got nitrogen to all the trees pretty early on and in a bit higher rate than you would use in walnut typically. But you can see the weed suppression in those areas that received chips. And then in terms of the leaf analysis, we saw slightly lower levels of zinc and manganese and higher levels of calcium and copper this past summer. But really nothing too dramatic. These are pretty subtle differences. And most importantly, the nitrogen level was the same. That's what when you're adding a bunch of carbon, you do not want to tie up, nitrogen. Root lesion nematode is probably the most interesting thing going on. We just got these numbers yesterday from Amanda Hodson. So Clarissa just crunched this, and it's astounding. So before trees were planted, I think it was before trees were planted. Anyway, the baseline measure, there was no difference. I just may have the wrong date here. There were no differences, and levels were pretty low for root lesion nematode. But most recently here this past November, really high numbers for the control and those same very low numbers for the chips. So just one sampling. We'll see where this goes going forward, but really, really interesting. So, and then no growth differences. Both, you know, at the time of right after planting there in March, and then a year later.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Clean Fuel Alliance has released a new study. It's called The Offsetting Impact of Expanded Biomass-Based Diesel Production on Diesel Prices. The study shows that U.S. production of biodiesel and renewable diesel consistently reduces distillate fuel prices by increasing the supply. As the production and availability of cleaner, better fuels grew over the past decade, the price impact increased to a 4% benefit in 2020 and 2021. Kurt Kovarek, President of Federal Affairs for Clean Fuels, says that at today's national average price for diesel fuel, the savings is equal to about 22 cents a gallon. Biodiesel and renewable diesel meet more than 6% of the nation's need for diesel fuel, according to the study. The study notes that even small changes in the supply of diesel fuel will result in relatively larger changes in a diesel fuel price. The study is available at cleanfuels.org. Busch Light and John Deere have announced a For the Farmers collaboration featuring limited edition beer cans to support farm rescue. The cans are available May 16th through July 3rd. Consumers can purchase 24 or 30-pack cases of 12-ounce Busch Light cans with farming graphics that feature the John Deere logo and equipment. For each case sold during its limited run, Busch Light will donate a dollar to farm rescue up to a maximum of $100,000, with John Deere matching Busch Light's donation. The U.S. is boosting its purchases of foreign food and agricultural products by quite a bit. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
For the first half of this fiscal year, U.S. agricultural exports are running 10% higher than for the same 6 months a year earlier. But the U.S. is importing 21% more foreign ag products than a year ago.
A pretty significant jump.
Yes, it is. USDA economist Bart Kenner says imports so far this fiscal year still trailing exports, but the gap is narrowing. In fact, during March alone, import values were a tiny bit higher than our exports at $17.8 billion worth.
More than $2 billion higher than any other month on record.
Now, traditionally, as far as U.S. purchases of foreign ag products,
they've been largely tied to produce, things that just grow better in climates that are outside the U.S.
But in recent years, the purchase list has expanded to include more animal products. For example, compared to a year ago, we're seeing
beef and veal up 33%, dairy up 11%.
And as far as the money we're paying for some of these imported products, beef, it's up 57% from a year ago, dairy up 34%. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The American Farm Bureau Federation is locked in an unlikely fight with the Securities and Exchange Commission over a proposed rule it says could force farmers to keep an inventory of climate emissions. AFBF says requiring farms to keep records of all climate emissions and making ag products used by public firms will hurt.
What that means for a farmer is almost every, you know, product they sell at some point will touch a public company. So that public company will have to report on the emissions of that farm.
AFBF's Travis Cushman says it's more red tape and cost for producers.
It has potential to mean the farmer is going to have to keep track of a very, very onerous set of emissions data, from carbon dioxide to methane to a slew of other emissions. That has potential to require a farmer to keep track of every gallon of diesel he puts in his tractor.
All of which could hit many farmers hard.
We're wildly worried that this is going to put a huge squeeze on small and mid-sized farms that simply don't have the capacity to keep track of all this information all the time.
When Cushman argues ag is already reducing emissions.
We're wildly worried that this is going to put a huge squeeze on small and mid-sized farms that simply don't have the capacity to keep track of all this information all the time.
When Cushman argues ag is already reducing emissions.
Agriculture is leading the charge in reducing the carbon footprint of America. We're getting much, much more efficient, or it's in the most efficient producers in the world here. And this rule, I think, would be a setback for those aims.
AFPF President Zippy Duvall calls the SEC proposal overreach that could keep small farms from doing business with public firms at a time when all farms are needed for food security here and abroad.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
While working as a commercial beekeeper, Elliot Radsner saw the need for a solution in the beekeeping industry. Now the co-founder and head of product at BeeWise, he tells us a bit more about the solutions they're working on.
Before BeeWise, I was actually a commercial beekeeper. And while working in the field, this idea of how we could actually do things differently and how we could utilize technology to help solve the bee problem came to life. And this is what I've been doing ever since. So we're using a host of technologies, basically from computer vision and machine learning and artificial intelligence, all the way to precision robotics. And basically the idea is to kind of look at the problem and kind of analyze it. And we kind of understood that there's no one problem here. Like, bees are facing many different challenges: climate change, pests, pesticides, pathogens. And we kind of realized that beekeepers know how to deal with these challenges. They know how to deal with these problems. The problem is that they can't do it at scale. So really the problem that we identified is the underlying technology, which is a wooden box that was developed 150 years ago. And that's, of course, the modern hive, right? It's a technology that was developed by humans for commercial beekeeping 150 years ago. But today, with modern challenges and modern scale of commercial beekeeping, basically it's just inadequate. And we're not able to give the bees what they need in real time. So the way our solution works is that we have ongoing 24/7 inspection. And so our system knows all the time what's happening with each and every colony of bees, each and every hive, exactly what's going on. And it actually can identify problems in real time, but more importantly, treat them in real time. So it's not only the ability to identify that this hive or that hive has a problem. The real game changer here is the ability to react in real time and not have to send a person out to the field, because until that person gets there, understands the problem and treats it, it's just too late. Oftentimes it's too late.
Now, we talk about the bee problem, but there's actually two solutions that Elliot claims BeeWise is working towards solving. He walks us through this and a bit more.
There are two related problems here. So one is the bee problem, or the beekeeping problem, in which the beekeeping industry is losing 30 to 40% of our bees every year. So beekeeping has kind of become unsustainable financially, operationally, economically, and we're just losing too many bees. The second related problem is the human problem, right? So it turns out that we really need bees, and we actually are dependent on them for our food supply. So bees pollinate 70% of our crops. Without bee pollination, we wouldn't have 70% of our crops. And that's why it's such a critical problem, both for bees and beekeepers, but for anybody who eats. So the entire human, population.
Now, beekeeping is a niche part of agriculture, but these pollinators work in all facets of the ag industry. So how exactly is BeeWise helping the ag industry as a whole?
So today, this is a complete, if you go to any ag show, you'll see that every aspect of agriculture today has some technology in it. It's got sensors, it's got robotics, it's got, everything is data driven. And basically the beekeeping is like one of the last industries that doesn't have really any technology in it. It's kind of this black box at the heart of agriculture. So think of it like beekeeping is it's kind of like soil and water. We need it. It's not like only for bees or only for honey. We need it for 70% of our crops. So it's the infrastructure. It's one of those infrastructure pillars of the majority of agriculture. And yet it's a completely black box. That white box that we call Hive that developed 150 years ago. I always like to say it's painted white on the outside, but actually it's a black box. There's no visibility to what's going on inside and to what can be done to improve it. If you want to understand what's happening, you have to actually send a person out to the field to open the box, to take the frames out, and to kind of look on. And that's only to begin understanding the problem. So that's not even, that's even before talking about solutions. So our solution actually enables us to know what's happening in every box all the time. And also, take preemptive measures and react to problems and fix problems in real time to ensure that the health of the colony and the strength of the bee colony inside each and every box is of high quality. And basically once you do that, the pollination is kind of the outcome of that. So we as beekeepers, we always like to say we don't provide pollination services. We are not honey manufacturers. We keep bees. And the bees, they provide the pollination. They produce the honey. So if you want to affect the pollination, you kind of have to make sure that you have the right tools to maintain strong and healthy colonies. Once you can do that, efficient pollination is kind of an outcome of that.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.